Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Daily Coast, The Brief. It's our weekly show about politics. I'm Marcos Molises. I'm here with Carrie Alleveld. And today we're going to talk about, what else are we going to talk about, Carrie?
Abortion. Like, what abortion. Else could we possibly, what could we talk about? I mean, seriously, it's not our fault. It's not our fault. It is dominating. It is dominating. So.
And we're going to get some background in, but it's a good thing. It's dominating. People are focused on the right thing, on the right issue, and sort of underpins everything we've said about the modern Republican Party, which is one that is hell-bent on taking away people's rights and autocratically ruling over the nation in a way that does not allow for dissent. And this is a perfect example of it. So we're going to get to it. So Carrie and I, we've been talking about abortion and its effects on elections, and probably we started the podcast years ago. So this is not exactly new territory. We said very, very clearly in early 2022, before the midterm elections, that the Supreme Court seemed poised to overturn Roe v. Wade, or at the very least, I don't know if we thought it was going to overturn it, but at the very least, add restrictions to Roe v. Wade. That was sort of the Supreme Court's attitude towards abortion rights. It had been Republican control for a long time, and they just been whittling away. It was sort of the boiling frog metaphor, right? That just by taking away a little bit of rights every year, people would not notice, and they would become acclimated and accustomed to these new restrictions. So there was probably a lot of thinking that maybe that's what the Supreme Court was going to do, add extra restrictions, maybe shorten it to a certain number of weeks. Do you remember?
I have to say, after the arguments, I think people really believe they might overturn it.
And so suddenly, yeah, you had this like, holy crap, are they really going to do it? And the draft decision was leaked early, which indicated that it was overturning Roe v. Wade. And that was what the ultimate final decision indicated. And that was an incredibly radical, I don't know if it was unexpected, but it was still surprising. And we very early, from that moment, that leaked decision came out, Carrie and I were like, oh, 2022 is going to be about abortion. And Republicans think they're going to win this big red wave, but abortion's going to dominate. And Carrie, I don't know if you remember back then, but all the punditry, which was mostly white men in political punditry, they're all like, that people will forget. They'll move on. They're going to talk about inflation. Like, they could not fathom the idea of having lost a right, because it wasn't their rights that were, I mean, can you imagine if the Supreme Court had invalidated Viagra? Oh, then it would be like, that'd be all the headlines for like 6 months.
But that Supreme Court is extreme. It's extreme. Yeah.
But it wasn't Viagra in the crosshairs. It was abortion rights. And what the Dobbs decision did is basically eliminate a federal right to an abortion, and it kicked the issue back down to the states. And ever since then, we've been fighting a state-by-state battle. Now, what's happened is, if you've been paying attention, is Democrats and pro-choice activists have won on the issue everywhere it has been fought, including in Kentucky, which is 48% evangelical, the most religious state in the country. And even there, pro-choice forces won narrowly. But they still won, and that if it could win in Kentucky, basically it could win everywhere. And so Republicans are starting to realize that, maybe this thing isn't going so well for us. And
Ohio voters voted on it twice, essentially. I mean, once in order to make it possible to get on the ballot, and then once at the ballot box, and they voted pro-abortion rights twice.
Yes. Yes.
So again, it doesn't matter where it comes up.
Yeah, this is another. Ohio is a red state nowadays. It's Trump plus eight the last two cycles. He's won it by 8 points. So yeah, so everywhere it's come up, and Donald Trump has noticed. Do you want to take it over from here? The how Donald Trump is sort of starting to realize that maybe this thing's a thing, because you've been writing about it nonstop for the last several months.
So here's the thing. You know, Trump has up until this week. And this is why we're talking about this once again. Up until this week, Trump has done this thing that he's done on a lot of issues, where he kind of has it always, right? He doesn't totally pin himself down. There's been a lot of reporting about how he's been afraid of the abortion ban issue. And then more recently, like he during the primary against Ron DeSantis, who signed a 6-week ban into law that just basically got approved to go into effect by the Florida Supreme Court last week, right? It's not in effect yet, but it will be very soon. So the 6-week ban, Trump called that a terrible mistake, quote unquote. Okay. So he was using that side, you know, that the anti, you know, it's too extreme, that idea. He was using that to beat up on DeSantis during the primary, but now he's got the primary locked up and he's been sort of floating and previewing the idea that maybe he would endorse a national abortion ban in the region of 15 weeks, right? He's even said things like, you know, in an interview, I think with Hannity, saying, well, you know, a lot of people are really centering on 15 weeks. And so I'm thinking about that. And just a few weeks ago, he even said, I'm going to announce something soon. Like, I'm going to announce something about an actual abortion ban soon. So his stated position essentially at this point, up until this week, was he was going to endorse some sort of national abortion ban. He hadn't quite done it yet, and he hadn't been specific about the weeks. And then on Monday, boom, after the Florida stuff comes down and after the Biden campaign pounces on it, and I mean pounce.
And the Florida stuff being the Supreme Court, Florida Supreme Court saying that it was a two-pronged decision, saying that a six-week ban was allowed to go forward and also allowing a ballot initiative that would make abortion legal in Florida this November. So that was a two-pronged decision. So yeah, so boom, you know, Florida, boom. big epicenter. Everybody's talking about abortion. So, okay.
Blows up. Thank you for, I was like, I'm going for it now. Yes, boom. Florida blows up, right? And the Biden campaign helps blow it up. I mean, they immediately, after that decision came down, they dropped an ad where they had Trump, in his own words, because he's bragged repeatedly about ending Roe, saying, no one said it could get done, and I did it. You know, it's been 50 years where people have been trying to get it done, and I did it, right? So he takes credit for it in that ad. And then they also released this strategy memo that Marcos and I discussed last week, where the Biden campaign made the case that Florida could now be in play based on there being a pro-abortion rights ballot measure that people could go vote on, et cetera, among other factors, right? It was a whole strategy memo that they released. And they also did this huge like campaign. They did several press calls with like campaign surrogates and whatever. So they were really out there pushing this. And I personally, like, you can never know why Trump does anything, why his campaign does anything. But it seemed to me like I think his campaign freaked out a little bit and was like, if we don't get him on something, he's going to go out at every different turn that he's asked about this and say a little something different. And, you know, if he's saying in one instance that it's going to be a 15-week national abortion ban, well, then it's an abortion ban. If he's saying in another instance that it's going to be state rights or he's not, you know, or he's obfuscating on it, people can accuse him of lying, or they can say he backed all the state bans, blah, blah, blah.
And but I basically think they must be looking at polling too, because the polling.
Oh, I'm sure. So oh,
that,
yeah.
I'm sure that added to their I would panic is the right word, but anxiety.
Yes, I would be surprised if over the past like couple months where Trump's been previewing this idea of a national abortion ban, they started really digging into the numbers, and he was kind of like floating some potential trial balloons, and they were like, holy shit, this is bad news. So on Monday, this is where the Trump campaign decides that Trump's finally going to choose a side, right? Let's listen, Walter, our producer, queued it up for us. Let's listen to, well, hold on. Let me just say, before we listen to it, this is actually going to be part of Trump's video. He posted a nearly 5-minute video where he rambled on and on about how he was endorsing states' rights to basically decide the length of the ban, right? Or not enact a ban, right? And then what happens after that is you're going to hear Joe Biden come in and sort of talk about what this means from his perspective and also what he will do if he's reelected. So if we could queue up, this is a Biden ad that was circulated.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Donald Trump just endorsed every single state ban on reproductive care nationwide. All across the country, women are being turned away from emergency rooms. are being forced to travel hundreds of miles or ask a judge just to get the basic care they need. That's Donald Trump's vision for this country. He said it himself. He punished women who seek out the care they need. If MAGA Republicans put a federal ban on his desk, he'd sign it. Donald Trump is the reason Roe's ended. If you reelect me, I'll be the reason why it's restored.
Okay, so what the Biden campaign did was they immediately went after Trump. They hung all these state bans on him, right? Because around his neck, they saddled him with it because he's the one who overturned Roe. He says it himself. He's responsible for it. So all these state bans that have gone into effect, they're on his shoulders now, right? And he's now endorsed them. He's now basically said, yeah, it's up to the states to decide. So if it's a 6-week ban or a 15-week ban, or it's no exceptions, nothing at all, it's a total outright ban, then this is how it should be, right? So the Biden campaign basically has three messages, right? It's Trump overturned Roe. He's responsible for the state bans, and now he's endorsed them. And three, Biden will codify Roe. He will restore abortion access, and Trump won't, okay? Nationwide, right? And they not only did they release this ad from Biden, but the Biden-Harris HQ rapid response Twitter account deployed this thing that I thought was like effing just masterful, which is they basically did a whole thread where they took every state with an abortion ban and said, Trump did this. Right. It's like, here's a thread on all the abortion bans have gone into effect. And Trump did this. They also, the campaign also dropped an ad, which was just gut wrenching, about this Texas couple who had dearly wanted their pregnancy, a baby daughter they expected to be coming. And tragically, at 18 weeks, the woman's water broke and she miscarried. But because she's in Texas, they wouldn't give her abortion care, right? It was standard medical care that they would remove that dead fetus from her womb, and they wouldn't do it. So she ended up in the hospital twice with sepsis, nearly died twice. And now, based on the after effects of that, you know, of the lack of medical care, may not be able to ever again get pregnant.
Yeah, and she's going through a baby box, looking at the outfit she had picked out for when the baby was born, and the footprints of the baby. It's horrid.
It's truly wrenching.
For that pro-life audience, then hear like now she can't have a baby,
right?
Because his care was denied. That's
and the final words of that ad was white text on a black screen. Okay, Trump did this. And in the background, you can hear that woman sort of whimpering, crying into the shoulder of her husband because she's so traumatized by what happened. It's not acting. It's real. And it's painful to watch. But Trump did this is the message. And so the Biden campaign, I think, by its extremely aggressive posture following the Florida ruling, right, helped put Trump in a very bad spot, the Trump campaign in a very bad spot, where it was clear they were going to prosecute this case that he was going to, you know, the Biden campaign was going to prosecute this case that he was in favor of a national abortion ban. They're still saying that he's going to sign it because you can't trust Trump at all. I mean, Trump said that he wasn't going to cut Social Security. And then in both of his in all of the budgets, at least two or three of the budgets that he put forth to Congress, it suggested cutting Social Security.
I mean, Medicare, right? He's also talking about exceptions. You don't exceptions to what? A ban? Like there's no way you can read his statement and go like, okay, he's not talking about a ban, because if he's saying no national ban, then there's no need to talk about exceptions for the life of a woman, rape, incest. So he went to pains. Whoever wrote that whole script. That meandering, tightly written script. But whoever wrote that went to pains to not put the word ban in it. So they really thought, and to be fair, a lot of headline writers in the traditional media fell for it. Oh, Trump kicks it to the states. He's not for a national ban. That's not what he said. In fact, he's very clear talking about exceptions. and you don't have exceptions without a ban. So he did sort of hoodwink some people.
Let's just say he never said that he would veto a national ban. Yeah. He never said that. He also still hasn't taken a position on how he plans to vote on Florida's abortion rights measure, right? So he either has to vote for it or against it. If he votes for it, it's one way. If he votes against it, then he's basically saying, yeah, the 6-week ban is fine with me. I don't know if he'll ever be pinned down on that, but he still hasn't taken a position.
Yeah. You know, what's really funny is that, and I want to get into sort of his rollout, because I think it's also, you know, we've talked about the Biden campaign and they've handled this incredibly well. I mean, it's almost a gift of an issue. It sucks that the issue exists and that we have to fight this battle, but we do. And the fact that it is so politically lopsided in the favor of the Democrats is a silver lining to this whole battle. It sort of exposes Republicans for who they are. But Trump literally said in one of his tweet things on Truth Social that we have taken the abortion issue largely out of play. He literally thought that it'd be like, all right, made my statement. Now we can talk about made up issues like the invasion on the southern border. Like, I mean, it's so absurd. But, and then I wrote about this. Carrie does most of the writing. I got her on the writing a piece, and I wrote about Trump's sort of no-win situation, right? Because he's getting blasted by the Biden campaign. The polls are showing what the polls are showing, that the issue is largely favorable for Democrats. Nothing else seems to be getting through the media landscape because these bans are being enacted in these important, critically important big states like Florida and in
Arizona. We're recording today on Tuesday, and Arizona just enacted, the Arizona Supreme Court just did essentially the same thing that Florida did, which was say, we're going to allow this 160-year-old law to go into effect, banning virtually all abortions, but also Arizona's are going to get to vote on this in November. So it's almost the same exact.
That law predates Arizona being a state. That's how absurd this whole situation is.
It predates women being able to vote.
Yeah, which you've made some very, very salient, witty tweets, Carrie, about how this is sort of what they want to get back to, right? Like the life went before women actually had any say in politics. Which is literally, maybe we'll do another episode someday. It's literally a thing that conservative circles are now working on. Like, how do they repeal the 19th Amendment? This is where conservatism has got. So Trump is here. The issue's unpopular. Everybody's asking about it. Florida, where he's now a resident, has this ballot initiative, and they're going to keep asking him, how are you going to vote? And he doesn't want to say, because I think in his heart, he does not give a shit about the issue. He doesn't care. He's made very clear in the past. I am shocked that no woman has come forward yet and said, you know, Donald Trump paid for my abortion, because you know there's no way he's gotten through life without paying for a handful of those things. So he doesn't really care about this issue. He doesn't go to church. He doesn't believe in you know, God, unless he's grifting off the Bible. And so he is sort of trapped. He's got to say something. The anti-abortion, pro-life Republican base is probably as important. It's the bedrock foundation of the Republican get out the vote machine. It is just like organized labor for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. You can't live without it. But they're agitating for a stronger statement on a national ban. And he's trapped from all these sides. So he comes up with a statement where he proudly takes credit for ending Roe v. Wade. And then he says, but we're going to let the states take it. And then he's very ambiguous about a national ban. He just sort of ignores the issue. Although, again, he talks about exceptions. So it's clear that he's thinking ban regardless. So what does this do, Carrie? It pisses off literally everybody. Which is, again, not always a politically bad thing. Right.
Well, you're talking about on his side specifically.
Yes.
I kind of wrote the Democrat side of this and you wrote the Republican side of this. So, yeah, go ahead.
So if there is a place, I remember when Bill Clinton's sister Solja, you know, to make himself pure, he criticized Sister Solja, who was a rapper. And I don't even remember why, but it made him like look like really reasonable and moderate. And so he wasn't going to win Republicans over with that. He was going to piss off a lot of Democrats, but there's this sort of middle that might be like, oh, he's a reasonable person, right? whether it worked or not, I don't actually remember. I don't know, but it's a thing, right? So there's a theory that Trump was trying to make himself sound more moderate by pissing off his base. He was never going to win Democratic pro-choice voters, but if the battleground is suburban college-educated white women who believe in a right to choice, maybe creating some strategic ambiguity might sort of give him a reason to vote for Trump, where otherwise it might be like not. Maybe not even suburban, maybe exurban, right? Because I think suburban votes like, yeah, no, we don't trust this guy.
I think it's starting to be gone,
but,
you know.
But they're so pushing out. So there's a lot of women who be like, this is untenable. And then by creating ambiguity, then maybe he gives those people a reason to vote for Trump, even if they like know that he's lying. Like they can pretend that maybe he's not lying. So there's a theory that that might be the case. And so to do that, you piss off, you create a ruckus. You have people like Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, which is the premier anti-abortion organization in the country. You have them up in arms complaining. You have people like Lindsey Graham complaining. You have all these Republicans saying, oh no, like you can't compromise on life. And literally, Carrie, you can't. If you believe what they do, that abortion is murder, so I believe killing a human being is murder. I'm never going to be like, all right, I'll compromise and you can murder anybody up to the age of 12. Like anybody after 12, oh, but before 12, go ahead, you can murder them. That's okay, that's my compromise. No, you don't do that. Murder is murder, right? You can't compromise on that. So it is. They're right. Like Trump, and Trump basically said in that statement that he was doing this because he needed to win in November. That by you know, he made this like, we need to win in November. And because if we don't win in November, then the whole world's going to explode and there's going to be death and destruction. I mean, I think he literally said death and destruction if he doesn't win. So these people are outraged. And again, if that could have been the intent, that could have been strategic, saying, ooh, Trump is moderating and he's pissed off his flank. But here's the thing, what happened, like, okay, he pissed everybody off. And then he saw Susan B. Anthony and Lindsey Graham and Mike Pence attack him. And he lost his mind on Twitter. Accused Susan B. Anthony of not doing anything until he came along. He did what they couldn't do. Lindsey Graham as well. I mean, it was hilarious. And basically he was accusing them of ruining his plan to take the abortion issue off the schedule. So
as only Trump could do. I mean, did they not prepare? I mean, I think he's desperate. I mean, it's a tell that he accused them of, you know,
he called them
his plan.
He called them hardliners. Like, yeah. I mean, he's just like insulting them. And
I think it's really clear. I'll just say this. It's really clear that he really was desperate to take it off the table. I mean, I just want to, let's go back. We've mentioned this, but let's just go back and read a part of this quote that he had. Quote, by allowing the states to make their own decision, we have taken, I mean, I cut out a little few words here, but he said all this. By allowing the states to make their own decision, we have taken the abortion issue largely out of play. That's what he posted Monday on Truth Social. Yeah. So he really, I mean, his desperation to get abortion off the table. Hey, we're just going to, I'm going to say it's a states' rights issue and we're just going to move past it because you know what? This is a bad playing field for us, right? So it's bizarre to me that none of his team let him know that like some of the anti-abortion extremists were going to go after him on this.
And you know what? Even if they did, shut up. Like literally shut up. He gave these people oxygen when it might not have been noticed. New York Times throws it into a story at the end, you know, political. Who cares? Like by attacking them on his platform and he elevated those voices and he highlighted this conflict. And this is not him being moderate anymore. Like he is clearly pissed that anybody would challenge him because he is an autocrat, right? He can't handle any kind of dissent. So because the smart play, not a great play, because again, it's a loose. The smart play would have been for the rest of the cycle, anytime somebody asked him about abortion, he'd say, I already made a statement. It's, you know, it's on a link on YouTube. You can go check it out. And they'd be like, yeah, but what are you going to vote? And it's like, I already said what I'm going to say. It's on that link. Let's talk about the border invasion. Like that's what a smart politician would do. Would just not give it oxygen. Trump can't do that. You really can't. And now he is going with a tit for tat with like Lindsey Graham and Susan B. Anthony. It would be like Joe Biden engaging on a Twitter feud with the heads of the AFL-CIO of major mm-hmm. labor unions. I don't know if it's a killer, but it's damn stupid to do so. Like, these are the people that are going to do the work to get you elected. He has no sense of respect of respect these people that are important to his reelection campaign and saying like, yeah, because they've all said, to be very clear, whether it's Lindsey Graham or, you know, Susan B. Anthony, they've all said like, we respectfully disagree. We're still going to work to defeat Biden, but we respectfully believe blah, 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 blah. So they're trying to use language that sort of opens up space to be like, okay, we're going to disagree on this issue. And that's, we'll just move on past it. He can't handle that. He can't even handle that mild sense of disagreement. And I truly believe, again, this was never a winner for him. I think he made it worse for him, which just kind of warms my heart, right? Because let them go after each other, because they're all horrible people anyway. And let them go after each other, arguing about just how much they're going to eliminate women's rights.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's keep that argument within the Republican Party alive. I mean, you know, look, if Trump wins, let's just play this out for a second. If Trump wins in November, it will be, I know this is horrible. I know. Don't pass out on me. Don't, you're sweating. No, but if Trump wins in November, right, then what we have, then it's clear that we will also have a Republican Senate and possibly a Republican House. Okay. If he does well enough to win in November, the Senate's probably gone.
Yep.
And the House might be too. Might be. All right. If they have the chance, if Mike Johnson, who is an anti-abortion zealot, right?
Yes.
If he is the Speaker of the House, they are going to push through an abortion ban so quickly your head is going to spin. They will do it fast. They will not wait. And Trump has not said he will veto it. You know, even though he supposedly said this is what, you know, it's the states are going to decide. He's not said he will veto it. And he very likely will just sign that just to get it off the table and not have to worry about it anymore. So, you know, I mean, I firmly believe that's not what is going to happen in November, that it's not going to be a particularly good night for Republicans and hopefully not for Trump at all. But that's just the shape of things, right? If they end up with control. Now, if Democrats end up with control, the opposite is going to happen if they have the votes in the Senate, right? Mm-hmm. They will pass a bill in the House restoring Roe v. Wade to the law of the land. Abortion access nationwide up to roughly 24 weeks, and also certainly medical care needed in the case of, you know, tragic situations, miscarriages, etc. Right? Mm-hmm. Women, parents, families will be able to make their own decisions, and they will pass that law. They will put it through to the Senate, and hopefully the Senate is going to, you know, would have the votes to, number one, get rid of the filibuster. But I actually think it's possible that they would get 10 Republican senators on that. I'm not sure. Right. Maybe they might. Maybe not. No, maybe
I
not.
I could think of 3 Republicans that might vote.
You're right. They have to do with a filibuster. But listen, if Democrats have the Senate, they very well might, because remember, Kyrsten Sinema isn't going to be in there anymore, mm-hmm. and neither is Joe Manchin. They're gone, right? So maybe Democrats, if they control the Senate, actually have the votes to do away with the filibuster. And what Joe Biden is saying is pledging, I will sign that bill. Yep. So, you know,
we've been saying, don't worry about polls early on, even though the polls keep looking better and better. So Biden's inching up. But again, I'm not, just because they're inching up, I'm not going to be like, no, look at the polls. I've been saying all along, look at the polls after the convention. Part of that is because people will be focused on the election, but part of it is because the magnitude of the abortion issue still has not been baked into the electorate. A lot of people still don't realize that Trump is the reason we don't have those rights. There are literally people out there who think it's Joe Biden's fault because he was president when they lost their abortion rights. It's not because they're stupid or apathetic. It's just they're not paying attention the way we are. And this stuff is weird and complicated and it's nonsensical. So it's reasonable for them to be misinformed. And this is what the campaign is going to be all about. It's about informing people the reason. And Trump going around bragging, I'm the reason this happened and nothing got done before I came along. And like, great. Like, he is doing our work for us. We don't have to work too hard. We just have to run his words. And like that Biden that we played earlier. And there was one last week where Trump is talking about, like, I'm the reason we got rid of Roe v. Wade. Trump is using his words. So those ads are going to run in perpetuity for the next, how many months we got left for the election?
I don't know. They're going to run a long time.
Six, seven months.
But, you know, I want to point out one other thing. This whole idea, this phrase that the Biden campaign has deployed, and they've been doing it for months, but they've really just, like, you know, leaned into it lately. Trump did this. It is such a simple, sticky, comprehensible phrase, right? Trump did this. It's just such a good way, I think, of framing all the bans because it's so simple. You know, it's true. And Trump has taken credit for it. So it's not like Trump can be like, no, I didn't do that. Yeah. You did this. You took credit for overturning Roe. Otherwise, this ban would never be in place. So I just kind of love the simplicity of Trump did this. Like, every time there's a new ban, every time there's a terrible, tragic, you know, medical issue that happens to someone, Trump did this. I mean, it's so good. And I think and they just keep redeploying it. And now I see all the Democrats, like, you know, and other people doing it. I see people outside of, like, Democratic circles using Trump did this. And I just think it's really well thought out campaign they have going to make sure that Trump is held accountable for this at the ballot box in November. And now we have, you know, and not just nationally, but now Arizona is going to have a ballot measure. Florida, as we discussed last week, is going to have a ballot measure. I think there's going to be one in Montana, maybe. Is that true? I think so. There's going to be a handful of states that have ballot measures again this year. So that is, no matter how that plays out, that's going to, how, you know, what happens in those states, it's going to work to Democrats' benefit. Whether or not they win those states, 100% capitalize on it, that's a different question. But there's no doubt that it works to Democrats' benefits in those states.
You know that the Trump did this is actually a jujitsu, because Republicans were putting stickers at gas stations with the high prices saying Biden did this.
And
this is a nice bit of jujitsu where, you know, gas prices kind of came down. Biden did this, sticker's still there.
Yeah.
And now something about, you know, losing a right, that just fundamentally hits stronger. Let's not forget that in 2022, when the Democrats mostly won that election, they only lost the House because of redistricting, but they overperformed historical norms. Inflation was legitimately at highest level in, you know, two generations. The economy was still sketchy. There was no sense that we were going to get out of it without a recession. People were truly economically scared. And abortion and Trump's attacks on democracy still won that day in the worst of economic conditions. Now, things are looking much better. The vibe session is receding. People are feeling more and more optimistic about the future. That's not to say that things are all peachy or that people don't live on the economic edge. And Carrie, I think you made this point that anybody, maybe in the story you wrote, or maybe even just in our Daily Coast Slack, that this election, the margins are going to be people who are on the economic edge. Those are the truly gettable people. Anybody that's economically secure, which is why the suburbs are sort of like landing on the Democratic side. Anybody that's economically secure, they can afford to vote on the right. Yeah. People who are on the edge, people who gas prices going up 5 cents actually makes a meaningful impact in their ability to be able to live. Those people are more susceptible to a Trumpian argument, blaming Biden for inflation, high prices, whatnot. But overall, the national trends, all the things that sort of matter in deciding how people are voting, are really trending in a Democratic direction. And so there is a desperation on the Trump side to land something. And to me, the fact that they even, you know, he even spent the day talking about abortion, which really does not play on his turf, and that he's been unable to shut up about it now going on 2 days, and we'll see how long it keeps going. Just sort of shows how he can't even focus on those issues. There's no message discipline. He is flailing. He is playing on the Democrats' turf.
Yeah.
And I don't see how he escapes it, because even his own party won't let him get off that turf.
I'll throw out a theory that I haven't really, sussed out yet, and I haven't researched, but it makes me wonder, because I truly believe, the more I look at the polling, I don't think that just like you were saying a second ago, the suburbs are probably, anyone who isn't looking at their grocery receipts afterwards and thinking, how the hell was my, grocery bill this expensive, right? Anyone who has the luxury of not having to do that, those suburbs, they are, I'm pretty sure, not going back to Republicans. They are voting on their rights. They are voting on democracy this fall. And I've heard the other people coming around to this, and I think it's true. So if the Republican, what Joe Biden might be able to do is squeeze out a few more white college educated men. Okay. Yeah. The white college educated women are already largely with Democrats and Biden. Mm-hmm. Maybe Biden can squeeze out a few more white college educated men. But it makes me wonder if what Trump is really worried about, because he thinks he's going to be able to replace these suburban voters with Black and Latino working class voters, right? That's the play. And I have seen polling, and I know that, the Latino vote, as you well know better than I do, is not monolithic, right? The Mexican American vote is very different from, for instance, Cuban Americans down in South Florida, right? The Mexican American vote in Arizona, Nevada, Texas, right? It's different. But I'm pretty sure I've seen polling recently where actually, and this is not intuitive, it's counterintuitive, that abortion, at least with, I think, Mexican American voters, Latino voters, they support abortion rights by quite a bit. And it makes me wonder if what Trump is really panicking about is not suburbanites who are probably already gone, but if he's panicking about whether or not his position on abortion might kneecap him with the working class Latinos who he needs to replenish his forces with. So I don't know. I'm throwing that out. I've seen the polling recently, and I was like, wow, I had not thought of that, So
we should definitely have an episode on the Latino vote. I think there's enough material there for us to work with and start really pondering into that. Because, it absolutely could be an issue. I think that polling is a mirage that shows Black and Latino men moving over to Donald Trump. I don't buy it. I don't see it replicated in a lot of polling. I do not buy it. And I do not buy it, not just because of the polling, but because in the election results the last 2 years, there's been absolutely zero evidence that the Latino vote has moved to the right. It just does not exist. So it doesn't take a lot of people in a poll to lie. Bunch of MAGA people say, "Yeah, I'm Latino. Yeah, I'm a white. I'm a Black guy," and then claim that they're like all Trumpy. It just doesn't. And the sample sizes are so tiny. It does not pass the smell test or the actual elections that happened recently test. No.
But Biden did underperform based on what Hillary Clinton won in 2016. I mean, Biden did not do as well with Latinos as Hillary did in 2016.
So we can get into it. As a percentage. He did not.
As an absolute
number, he got more Latino votes. And the margin between the two was larger because a lot more people voted, a lot more Latinos voted in 2020 than 2016. So, he brought out a lot of Latinos that hadn't voted, but so did Joe Biden. And so as a percentage, it looks like Trump made some gains. But the absolute numbers, just because there's so many more, and I know that's complicated math, and sometimes my brain hurts at it. I'm not a math person. But anyway, I think we're digressing from the main point of this episode, which is abortion and how screwed Donald Trump and the Republican Party is. And we got to go, Carrie, but I just want to one little anecdote before we go. We all know Carrie Lake, right? She ran for governor in Arizona. She's a Senate Republican nominee this year. She is MAGA 100%. She lives at Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump. That she is about the worst of the worst. She's in a perpetual feud with Liz Cheney and Meghan McCain and all those people because she believes to this very day that Trump won in 2020, that the election was stolen. Like, she's the worst. Even she looked at the decision from the Arizona Supreme Court and said that this was a bad decision. even the most rabidly anti-abortion, and not because she disagrees with the results of the decision, because this is what they're all working towards. They want to ban all abortion, all exceptions, all across the land. The reason is because she knows that politically, this screws Arizona Republicans. Her Senate race, the presidential race, two of the Supreme Court justices who voted to ban abortion are actually on the ballot. It's a retention ballot this November. This, and then they have state legislative seats, and the Republicans have the slimmest majorities in both chambers, if I remember correctly. So there's a lot at stake. And so she's looking at this decision, not at the result, but because she sees how politically destructive it is. They are screwed. And if Carrie Lake looks at a decision like that and says, uh-oh, we're in trouble, you know that Republicans are in trouble. So that's what we're working with as we head into November. I don't see how that dynamic changes, Carrie. I don't see anything that can change that. It's sort of like they're driving into a brick wall and there's nothing they can do to stop it.
I don't think so. And the only question is how well the Biden campaign prosecutes their side of the story against Republicans. And frankly, they are doing a fucking masterful job. So good on them.
So far, so good. Yeah, Trump is screwing up his side. Biden is not. Great. Like, I hate that we have to fight this fight, but if we have to fight it, I'm glad that we're winning it the way we are, because the American public is with us. History is with us. We're going to win this, and it's going to be a key factor heading into November. No matter how much Trump wants to talk about inflation or the border, at the end of the day, this issue is maybe going to be top of mind. So far, so good, Carrie. I'm excited about November. I mean, usually I'm not. But usually I'm scared shitless, but no, I'm actually feeling good about November. So that is our show for today. Thank you so much, Carrie, for being such a wonderful host. Thanks to Walter for producing, Carrie, the helps behind the scenes. And thank you, viewer, listener, reader, for being part of this movement to save our democracy from the forces of MAGA. Glad to have you by our side. We have history on our side. We have the issues on our side. We have the people on our side. And I'm glad to have you guys with us. So thank you so very much. Catch you all next week.